KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Joshua Johnson, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Congress is considering two controversial bills to help fight internet piracy conducted through web servers based overseas. The question is, will these measures hurt others even as they stop the thieves? The bills, known as SOPA and PIPA, have the support of Hollywood production studios and unions, since piracy literally takes money out of their pockets. But Silicon Valley and the high-tech sector oppose it, fearing the bill could be an overreach that stifles innovation. In this hour, we'll explore the fight over internet piracy, next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, good morning. Welcome to Forum. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News, sitting in for Michael Krasny. I think we can all agree, stealing is wrong. Even if no one sees what you stole or dies or gets hurt, it's still wrong. That includes stealing digital content over the internet. And that kind of theft, by many accounts, happens all the time. It's so easy to do, and stopping it has proven to be so, so hard. In Congress, two companion bills known as SOPA and PIPA seek to give the federal government more power to fight pirated content on overseas web servers. The Senate has scheduled the first procedural vote on PIPA 3 weeks from today. Let's discuss the idea with people on both sides of the issue. Rick Cotton is general counsel for NBC Universal. He's also the chairman of the Coalition Against Counterfeiting and Piracy, and he joins us by phone. Good morning to you, Rick.
Good morning.
Also, Fred Von Lohman is senior copyright counsel for Google. The internet giant came out early against SOPA and PIPA, and he joins us here in studio. Fred, good morning.
Good morning.
Later this hour, we'll speak to a Bay Area filmmaker who's seen her own work pirated online. And we'll talk to a California congressman who doesn't think SOPA or PIPA are the way to go. He says he's got a more open idea. We'll let him explain it. First, Rick Cotton of NBC Universal, let's start with you. For people who feel like internet piracy is one of those things that only affects big companies, rich people, the guys with the big house in Beverly Hills who are dealing in millions and billions of dollars, and who cares about me, how does internet piracy affect the average person?
Well, I think you have to take a step back and look at fundamentally what our jobs and our economy is based upon. The United States does not aspire to be a low-cost manufacturing economy. We aspire to have high-wage jobs. We aspire to have industries that add a high amount of value. And only if we sustain those sectors of our economy can we hope to compete globally and get our economy back on a path toward growth. This bill, first of all, addresses not just the theft of digital content, which can extend from today books and software through what many people think of more frequently in terms of film, TV, music, electronic games, etc. But it addresses the rampant sale of counterfeit physical goods from foreign websites, which undercut many of the high growth sectors of the U.S. economy. So what is at stake here is really the health long-term of the U.S. economy, because if we don't ensure that the economic benefits of our innovation, of our technical invention, and of our creativity create jobs here and allow them to be stolen by criminals operating sites in foreign countries, we are truly risking our future, our children's jobs, and our economic health.
These two bills, the Stop Online Piracy Act and the Protect Intellectual Property Act, SOPA and PIPA, if those bills move forward in their current form, or actually, let me ask it a different way, if those measures had already been in place prior to now, talk about what the landscape would look like for companies like NBC Universal, Viacom, News Corporation, the Walt Disney Company that deal in billions of dollars of content that is extremely lucrative and extremely valuable. If you'd had these kinds of protections in place before, how might that have affected your business prior to now?
Well, again, I want to stress the fact that it also extends to companies like Pfizer, other pharmaceutical companies, small companies that depend on innovative machine tools that that drive much of the job growth in the United States. And I think what has happened, and the other big picture framework here, is truly the rule of law on the internet. And so the way, if these laws had been in effect, I think one could have imagined the evolution of the internet over the past decade or so would be a recognition by the internet user community that the rule of law, that lawlessness, that theft, the trafficking in counterfeit goods, the trafficking in stolen digital content, is as unacceptable in the digital world as it on the internet as it is in the physical world. And what we've allowed to develop is a notion which you actually refer to, which is that somehow the internet is a zone in which anything goes. And to the extent that I would say everyone from government, I'm sure, to Mr. von Lohmann, to most people, the broadband internet is truly emerging as a pillar of 21st century society.
Well, let me ask Mr. von Lohmann about that pillar of 21st century society. The concern seems to be a certain lawlessness in the internet, an internet that Google helped to make explode very, very quickly and make very accessible. I'm sure that Google does not support internet piracy by any stretch of the imagination, and I have not gotten that impression from any of Google's opposition to SOPA and PIPA. It seems like your concern is that in the effort to catch these pirates, it may also end up doing damage downstream in the channels that the pirates use to do business, but also that people like me use to just kind of live my digital life. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. Google has always been a staunch opponent of online piracy. But it's incredibly important to emphasize that what a small proportion of the great internet experience relates to these issues. These are important issues, no question about it. We need to do things about this. We support measures that would try to address particularly foreign pirate sites. So with respect to those issues, there's a lot that we completely agree with Mr. Cotton about. The issue here, though, is when government acts, you have to be very careful about unintended consequences. And so we're worried about a couple of things. First of all, we don't want a bill passing into law in our country that sends a message to other countries that internet censorship is a good way to handle your domestic legal issues. That's, of course, a direction that countries like China, Iran, Pakistan, others have already gone down that path. We don't think it's appropriate for the United States to follow in that line.
Now, let me stop you there. You've made a comparison in a potential U.S. policy to Iran and China, and you've used the C word, which nobody particularly likes to use in relationship to U.S. policy. What about SOPA and PIPA do you consider potentially censoring the internet?
It's a very important point. The bills specifically create four new remedies for intellectual property rights holders. One, and the first two actually, in our minds, touch on the issue that I mentioned earlier, that sort of creating a precedent that other countries might view as being supporting or at least not opposing censorship. So the first is the U.S. government can go to court, get a site declared to be dedicated to infringing activity or dedicated to theft. The language varies in each bill. But once that court order has been issued, internet service providers would then be required to basically disappear the website for American internet users, block the site, make it disappear off the internet. The second remedy would be that order would require search engines like Google, Microsoft's Bing, others, to delete that site from its search results. So effectively, the government would be getting a court order to disappear these sites from the public internet in the United States. The other two remedies in the bill, Google actually supports. We think they're a good idea to try to deal with this problem. And those would be, once a court order is issued against a site, you'd be able to cut off the advertising relationships the site has with networks like Google's and Yahoo's and others. Or in addition, you'd be able to get payment processors like Visa, MasterCard, and PayPal to cut off their relationship with these sites. Google and a number of other tech companies and the payment processing community as well support the last two measures, the ones that basically try to cut off the money, if you will, that supports these sites. But the first two, the site blocking and the search removal, Those are the ones that are very – are an echo, if you will, of the kinds of approaches that more repressive regimes have pioneered.
Rick Cotton from NBC Universal, what do you make of that? It seems like there is a split in the bill. Both sides seem to have some that they can agree on. Maybe if we just hacked out the part that you didn't agree on, we'd have a bill that would pass right away. But the aspect of blocking the sites and blocking their business end in two different ways, do you think both of those – tactics are essential, or would you be able to live with more of a compromise bill?
No, they're both really critical, and I think they're critical in the way that we were discussing before, which is that internet users have to recognize that stealing and accessing stolen content and counterfeit goods on the internet is simply not an acceptable mode of utilizing the internet. So let's talk specifically about what I thought Mr. Von Lohman did a very good job of pointing itemizing what is at stake here. But the sites that are subject to the first two remedies, which is denying access by an internet provider or not having search engines return the results, are sites that are dedicated to theft. And so what I would say Mr. Von Lohman and others are doing is they're confusing lawlessness with freedom. Freedom does not include freedom to steal. It doesn't include that in the physical world, and it should not include that in the internet world. And the notion that enforcement techniques, legitimate enforcement techniques, can be misused in a repressive way can be made with respect to virtually any enforcement tool that's available to civilized societies. I mean, the Chinese use police to arrest dissidents. Does that mean we shouldn't use police? No. The answer is that our enforcement techniques should be directed and very carefully calibrated to address illegal activity. That is what this bill does.
We're talking about internet piracy and new efforts in Congress to combat it with Fred Von Lohman of Google and Rick Cotton of NBC Universal. We look forward to talking about it with you as well. Please line up on the phones, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can email us, forum@kqed.org. And shame on me, I should be on the Facebook page by now, but I'm going to log on right now. I will keep an eye out for your comments, so please share your comments on that as well. I wonder, Mr. Cotton, you know, sometimes I wonder how much of the onus for this is on Congress and how much of the onus on this is on the industry. I mean, if I see something on USA, which is a network that NBC Universal owns, if I see a great, you know, little special, a comedy special, whatever, that airs on USA, and I love it and I want to go back and share it with somebody, and it's not on your website, I might just go to YouTube and see if somebody grabbed it and put it on YouTube. Now, I don't affirm piracy, but I want what I want. At what point do content providers, or perhaps you're already moving toward that point, just say to yourselves, you know what, this is the way of the world, we got to be one step ahead of these pirates, we got to be faster than them, we got to have a better solution than they have, and it's just up to us to outplay them.
Well, the fact is that access, legitimate access to content, is mushrooming on the internet. As I'm sure you know, NBC, ABC, and Fox came together around Hulu. That site now has both an ad-supported site and a subscription site, which make available huge amounts of exactly the kind of television content that you referenced, iTunes, similarly. But the fact is, I could go on and list other services, but the fact is these new forms of distribution, which all of the content creators are embracing, cannot compete against stolen, cannot compete against free. And no one is forcing anyone to watch a television program. No one is forcing anyone to watch a film. No one is forcing anyone to use a particular brand of office software. But the fact is, all of these require huge investment in order to produce the very content and the very products that consumers want.
Fred, I wonder if you are how sympathetic you are to the challenges that companies like NBC Universal and Viacom and Walt Disney and News Corporation face in producing content. I mean, you know, in some ways, Google has been very blessed because you've had a piece of intellectual property, this wonderful algorithm that has printed money for years, and it has made your country, your company wildly profitable, as opposed to an industry like the business that NBC Universal is in, TV, movies, theme parks, where the capital barrier to entry is enormous in order to make that kind of money. How sympathetic are you to the concerns of content creators, whether they're large or small, whether they're of NBC scale or KQED scale or, you know, some independent filmmaker scale, in saying, I just can't afford to compete with the pirates anymore?
We at Google are very sympathetic, and we invest an enormous amount of money in trying to help creators to actually monetize their content. I agree with Mr. Cotton. The legitimate alternatives are crucial. Netflix, Spotify, services like that, those are going to make a bigger dent on internet piracy this year than anything Congress could do. I think everyone agrees that the best way, the ultimately the only way in the long run to beat online piracy is to give people something better that's legitimate. And I would praise the industry. They've been making great strides in that direction, services like, you know, Hulu and Netflix and all of these. You've heard about them. But Google has also done a great deal. YouTube, for example, we've built a lot of systems into YouTube, our content identification system, for example, that allows rights holders to say, hey, I own copyright in this video content, and our services, our systems will automatically detect when that content appears, and then we will allow the rights holder, they can choose. If they'd like to block that, they're free to do that. But what we've found with the more than 3,000 content owners, including large companies like NBCU, smaller content owners as well, what we found is among those 3,000 companies that are working with us with that system, the majority, in fact, the vast majority, elect to leave the content up. We put ads around it, and then the money gets shared. In fact, the majority of the money goes back to the content owner. So we're very sympathetic, and we're trying to build those the kinds of solutions that will basically let content owners invest, make great content, and then profit from it online.
Now, the current iteration of SOPA there was an amendment to this called a manager's amendment proffered that would more clearly or that would clarify that the bill is not intended to target American websites. So Facebook, Twitter, Yahoo, Google would not be the focus of SOPA and PIPA. How concerned are you that that could change, that the slope would be so slippery that eventually Congress would say, you know what, that's not good enough. We have to go after Facebook, Google, Yahoo as well.
There's two ways in which the bills, both on the House and the Senate side, continue to threaten American companies. The first is, on both bills, it would include American companies that operate websites on so-called country code top-level domains. So that would be, folks may have seen Amazon.ca, that's the Canadian site for Amazon, or, you know, eBay.co.uk, which would be the UK site for eBay. The bills still reach those domains, so we haven't really succeeded entirely in making this just focused on foreign sites.
So it could be affecting the foreign operations of American companies.
Correct. And the other area where there's a big concern is there is a foundation that was put in place by Congress in 1998 called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, often abbreviated as DMCA. And that law really created the foundation, the copyright foundation, if you will, for all of the internet companies that people enjoy, whether it be eBay, Amazon, Google, you name it. We all depend on that basic set of rules. And all of the internet companies have been very concerned that the provisions in SOPA and PIPA might undermine that foundation. This is the importance of what we lawyers call the DMCA safe harbors. And while the Senate bill has taken some steps to protect that basic foundation, the House bill so far has not included something
That's
similar.
That's not correct. That the manager's amendment included a DMCA savings clause.
Well, we'll get into the finer points of that a little more in just one second. We've still got a little more time to discuss this with Rick Cotton of NBC Universal and Fred Von Lohman of Google. I want to bring in Ellen Seidler. She's a filmmaker based here in the Bay Area, and she's had some direct personal experience with how internet piracy has affected her. Ellen, good morning.
Good morning.
Ellen, tell me about the kind of work that you do.
Well, I'm a college professor, but I'm also an independent filmmaker, and a few years ago with a partner, Megan Seiler, co-produced, co-directed an independent film, basically a self-financed independent film. It was quite successful in the film festival circuit, and then we released it on DVD and legitimate online outlets. And within 24 hours, it was online in illegal form.
How did you discover that it was online? Were you just surfing the web, or did someone tell you that it had been pirated?
Well, I was aware that piracy was going to be a problem, but what I was shocked by was the extent of piracy and how rapidly that one link multiplied into hundreds, if then thousands, and we stopped counting. I've documented over 50,000 download links and streams to our film thus far. And you know, the thing that surprised me most, though, when I started to sort of delve into the issue was not just that the film was being pirated, but what I saw was driving the piracy. And in my mind, the biggest issue right now is the monetization of stolen content. And that's what's driving the bulk of piracy. It's not the Pirate Bays of the world, the torrents. They're sort of obsolete. It's the cyber lockers and the business model that depends on stolen content. And I have to say, with regard to Google, you know, Mr. Von Lohman is talking about how Google supports efforts to cut off the money supply. But in a year and a half, 2 years of sort of dealing with this issue, every time I've approached Google about, you know, pirate websites or ads are ubiquitous on pirate websites, they've done everything turn into a pretzel to avoid taking responsibility. They send DMCA notices to a website called chillingeffects.org, the implication being that your DMCA notice is somehow chilling free speech, when in fact you as an artist are just asserting your legal rights. And so I find it a little disingenuous to hear him talk about how concerned Google is about this when in fact their ads are the most prominent across the web.
Hey, Ellen, before we let Fred Von Lohman respond to that, can you estimate for me how much you would have made on this film if the pirates had not taken it?
You know, it's easy to... I've talked to our distributor, and both my partner and I, we basically self-funded this film. And we went into it not thinking we'd make a great deal of money, but we certainly felt we would pay off our debts. And it's a niche film, a lesbian romantic comedy, so we had a pretty good idea of our audience and what the potential was. And so
that could be quite an audience, you know.
Well, no, the film was quite successful. We screened in more than 100 film festivals around the world. So it was well-received and very popular. But what happened is, you know, this DVD sales, the bottom has dropped out, obviously.
Right, and briefly, because I want to make sure we give Fred a chance to respond.
Yeah, no. And so, you know, let me just say this. If we'd released the film about 5 or 6 years ago, we'd have no problem making our money back. And now that's never going to happen.
Fred Von Lohman of Google, what would you make of Ellen Sidler's complaint about Google's, in her view, inability to really rein in on these pirates or to just kind of pay it lip service? Yeah, we'll deal with it. What would you say to Ellen?
Well, we, of course, are very sorry that her film has suffered this fate. However, I mean, we've been very clear, including with the takedown notices we've received from Ms. Sidler, we take that material down. If someone tells us there's pirated content on this particular web page, we remove an ad from that page. We, on our own initiative, blocked more than 25,000 web pages last year from receiving our ads without waiting for a complaint. We found them. We said, hey, this looks illegitimate. We removed the ads. We get complaints regarding copyright infringement for far less, far, far less than 1% of all the pages out there that show our ads. And when we do, we immediately take those ads down.
We're coming up on a break, and Ellen, I really do appreciate your time. Fred, would you be willing to connect with Ellen after the show's over? Maybe you can help her resolve whatever this is?
Absolutely.
Excellent. We're speaking to Fred Von Lohman of Google, Rick Cotton of NBC Universal. After the break, we'll speak to Congressman Daryl Issa. He's got another idea for dealing with internet privacy, neither SOPA nor PIPA, something he says is more open. We'll let him describe it. We'd also like you to describe your thoughts on internet piracy. Maria in Santa Rosa, I'm coming to you first when we open up the phones at 866-733-6786. Email us forum@kqed.org or hit us up on our Facebook page. I'm Joshua Johnson, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Stand by, please. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News, sitting in for Michael Krasny. We're talking about a controversial effort in Congress to stop internet piracy with Fred Von Lohman, Senior Copyright Counsel for the internet giant Google, and Rick Cotton, General Counsel for the media conglomerate NBC Universal. We've been speaking about two bills, SOPA and PIPA, but there are other efforts to try to combat internet piracy. One comes from California Republican Congressman Daryl Issa, who joins us now on the line. Congressman, good morning.
Well, good morning, and thanks for covering this issue that will have a huge impact on Silicon Valley if, unless we get it right.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, you have been proffering another idea other than SOPA and other than PIPA that you've called the Online Protection and Enforcement of Digital Trade Act, or the OPEN Act. How is it similar to SOPA and PIPA, and how is it different?
Well, it's similar in that it will, in fact, stop our foreign entities from profiting, if you will, for a very short period of time before they get shut down. It uses the 1930 Tariff Act. It uses administrative law judges that are already experienced at enforcing IP protection, and it does everything it can do except it doesn't fall within the committee that authored these other two bills, and that's judiciary. I'm a member of judiciary, so Lofgren. We stood up in the committee and said, look, this is a great bill written to make sure that only judiciary gets to hear it, but this isn't a judiciary issue. This is a commerce issue. And by using the International Trade Commission and its administrative law judges, expanding their authority to follow the money, to shut down the revenue that these pirates receive, we can do a very efficient job of shutting down piracy the way we did with overseas or offshore gaming.
Now, I don't want to blow past that distinction that you're making. The ITC is the same body that, say, Apple uses when they go after HTC because, oh, the Android phone infringes on patents in the iPhone. It's an existing structure that already takes on issues of intellectual property in pretty huge and robust ways.
Exactly. And I think what's significant is it's an existing entity that has one tool, which is injunctive relief. It stops things. It has the right to issue very quick orders. It has the fastest docket. And because it uses administrative law judges and career prosecutors, if you will, within the system, you don't have to have, I heard your last caller, you don't have to have a lot of money. You can bring a case before the ITC and say, look, here's my movie. It's being ripped off. Here's the places that are ripping it off. I want to bring a claim.
Right, but let's be real though. That's a pretty complex process, though, isn't it? I mean, isn't something like a piracy claim or a patent infringement? That's the province of someone who's got the money and the lawyers to back them up, isn't it?
Well, generally, it would be. What happens if you talk to anybody who's had an ITC case related to patent, which is where a lot of their cases are? They will tell you that the ITC is a fraction of the cost of going to district court. It gets you an injunction faster, and you're dealing with judges who are very seldom overturned because they understand patent law. They understand intellectual property. So if you're a movie maker or any other intellectual property holder, and what you want is quick injunctive relief and then follow the money if they try to resurrect themselves, would you rather have a court that is specialized in that already and has been doing it for decades and has a good track record for stopping piracy of tangible items, or would you like to have a funded part of the Department of Justice and hope that they bring cases and recognize that ultimately you're still in the federal courts with judges all over the country who may not specialize in this? You know, most federal judges come out of prosecuting cases. They're criminal. This is clearly something where it's technical, but we want them to be able to do two things. We want them to be able to recognize intellectual property and who it belongs to, and then we want them to be able to follow the money and shut down the funding that your last caller made very clear. It's the funding that she was denied.
Right.
It wasn't that they were giving away her movie. It's that they were selling it below her cost because they had no cost in the movie.
I'm going to go ahead and put a link to your website on our Facebook page. I'm going to do that right now. And I think the interesting thing about this is that you are allowing the public to chime in on the way this bill is being written. Is that right?
Well, absolutely. We were able to leverage technology that makes the open bill the first completely open bill for people to, they can't do it anonymously. They come in, they say, here's who I am, they get authenticated, and then they give us their, if you will, their comments. And they can write it in very legal language, or they can make it much less legal. But everyone else on the web can see what they're doing. So if Google and the Motion Picture Association each wanted to modify this bill, each would see how the other was trying to improve it, hopefully, because we believe that this is the basis. It's bipartisan, Senator Wyden and myself, along with, of course, Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren. It's gaining bipartisan support because it's a scalpel to deal with the problem. It's a big problem, but we only want to cut out the pirates. We don't want to cut out the innovation on the Internet.
Well, Congressman Darrell Issa, I appreciate your time. I just posted the link to our page on Facebook. It's facebook.com/KQED Forum. Congressman Darrell Issa, appreciate your time, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anytime.
Rick Cotton of NBC Universal, what do you make of the OPEN Act in principle? Would that help to solve the problem, perhaps a more surgical solution, as Congressman Issa puts it?
Well, I guess I'd make two comments. First of all, we appreciate the fact that Mr. Issa has recognized the scale of the problem and the need to do something about it. And I think that's something that we all really have to keep in mind. When Mr. von Lohman made the comment that this was a small proportion of the Internet, wrong. It is 25% of the bandwidth of the Internet is, by an independent study, the result of illegal traffic. We are facing a serious threat to the U.S. economy. So we're grateful to Mr. Issa for recognizing that problem. We do disagree with his bill. We think that the bills that have been proposed by the Senate in the Senate and in the House by Chairman Leahy and by Chairman Smith are a much more effective way to go. We have great concerns about the amount of resources, the length of time, and the delay that would be entailed in the process that that Mr. Issa's bill proposes.
Fred
so
von...
we are strongly in support of SOPA and PIPA.
Fred von Lohman of Google, what do you make of OPEN? Briefly, and then we're going to go to the phones.
We think the OPEN Act is a great step in the right direction. It focuses on the heart of the problem, which is the money. As Chairman Issa mentioned, follow the money is the way to deal with the piracy problem. These foreign rogue websites, none of them are doing this as an act of charity. All of them, whether they're selling handbags or whether they're offering movies for download, they're all in it for the money. Until you deal with that, they'll still be there. Once you deal with that, you have a solution.
Gotcha. Let's go to the phones, 866-733-6786. Maria from Santa Rosa, as promised, I said we'd start with you first, and so we shall. Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a more philosophical angle to take this all towards. Being an Internet user, I think that Congress is crossing a line when you start to make a choice about how I, as a user, can or cannot access content. I think to say that you are going to protect the filmmakers, which I empathize with, by not allowing us to see what's available out there on the Internet, I just think is crossing a line and is definitely getting us onto a slippery slope.
Gotcha. Thanks, Maria. I appreciate the comment. Let's hear from Nick in Sunnyvale. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
What's on your mind?
So I have a couple comments a couple points. But the first is that...
Well, we have a lot of callers. Give me your one best point.
So I might mispronounce this, but it's either the BI or the BI, Norwegian School of Management, had a study done. It was only with 1,900 Internet users, so I understand that that's a small sample. But it showed that these people were frequent pirators of music, actually bought more music in the long run. Bought more music. This is on Ars Technica, so you can actually look that up.
I see it. I'm actually looking at it. And it says that the labels are very skeptical. But does that mean that you would allow the piracy to continue?
No. So I see that there is kind of like a price gap here. So if you reference, say, the Steam online sale, which is an online portal for buying digital versions of PC games. It had a sale over the holidays, and there's actual hard numbers from the CEO of that company that showed that if you reduce the pricing on games, you actually make it up in volume, and you gain more of these consumers that you say that you're missing.
Gotcha. Well, Nick, let me put that point to Mr. Cotton from NBC Universal. I appreciate the comment. Rick Cotton from NBC Universal, I hate to admit it, but, you know, back in the days when there was just Napster and LimeWire and BearShare, a lot of people got a lot of digital content. And then we started moving to iTunes. People are moving to Google Music because it's a better service. But we were already kind of in the vein of getting content digitally. Do you see perhaps how people will begin to get hooked on digital content? And then once you provide a way to make it better, they'll say, OK, I'm going to stop just downloading it for free. I'll buy it from you knowing it's better.
You need both. You need both. You need clear signals to the Internet community what is legitimate, and you need clear signals what is not legitimate. Hulu, Netflix, iTunes, The list, as I said, goes on and on. There are legitimate access points for virtually, if we're talking about television, virtually any television show that you want on an on-demand basis. What we need, and that is what the bill provides, is signals to the Internet user community that accessing illegally stolen content, and whether that's counterfeit physical goods or whether it is stolen digital content, is not only not acceptable morally and legally, but it is undercutting our future economics and the jobs in the United States of America. We need the technology to communicate that fact.
We're getting a lot of comments on Facebook and via email. Thank you for them. Keep them coming. Lorente Cruz on Facebook writes, I would assume that these illegal websites would be blocked, but what would prevent these websites from changing their web address? The U.S. government will always lag behind in chasing these sites. Blocking is not going to work. Fred Von Lohman, I see you nodding your head in agreement.
That's exactly right. What we're very concerned about is having a law in the United States that says that when our domestic laws are violated, we go to blocking websites. That's a message that I think we cannot afford to communicate that abroad, that basically, you know, they feel like their laws are just as valid as our laws. And in a world where we're blocking sites and other countries are blocking sites, that's really a road that strikes us as both dangerous and also, as this comment points out, not going to work, because as long as there's money to be made by these foreign sites, they're going to create new domain names. They're going to crop up in hundreds of places overnight. So you've got blocking, bad precedent, not effective.
And it's also worth noting before we go to our next call that the bills, as I understand them, would go after the domain name server. It's that part of the web, basically, because a web address is both a name and a number. When you type in google.com, that's the name. Behind google.com is a number that the domain name server knows to say, oh, that's number 128 point whatever it is. The bill would target the name, but not the number. If you still knew the number, you could theoretically still get to the site.
That's right. But this is also the key behind why a number of internet security experts have also said this site blocking, this approach using the domain name system to try to block websites, creates a serious cybersecurity threat to our country as well.
Because it just creates another back alley for people to go down.
It really encourages internet users to switch their domain name servers to other places in order to avoid these blocks. And that makes people vulnerable to other kinds of security threats. So we have a lot of people who take that very seriously.
Actually, before I let you respond, I want to go to one more caller in Berkeley. Good morning. Hi, Berkeley. Are you there?
Hello.
Nathan in Berkeley. Good morning.
Nathan in Berkeley.
Yes, good morning.
Yeah, there's something that came up right at the beginning of the show. You said that that piracy is literally taking money out of the pockets of union filmmakers and whatnot. This term piracy is very heavily loaded. Pirates are people who go on to other people's ships and kill them. Now, there's nobody dying here. And so the use of this term is it inflames passions, but it doesn't really apply to what's actually happening here. Now, on the highways, there's people, thousands of people who actually are dying because cars are going faster than they should be, perhaps. But we don't make it against the law to make a car that will go faster than 65 miles an hour.
That's a worthy point, Nathan. Actually, let me put that to Rick Cotton of NBC Universal, this use of the term piracy. Does that word get a little loaded for some people where they might think, you know, piracy, that's got a lot of emotional weight that some people may not feel the way you feel it?
It's theft. It's theft, plain and simple, and theft is wrong. So the terminology actually should be, we should be talking about theft and we should be talking about illegal content.
But the bill says piracy. It's in the name.
It's in the name, but it's not actually in the text of the bill. So what the bill says is either dedicated to infringing activity in the Senate bill or dedicated to theft of U.S. property. So we're talking about theft. The websites we are talking about are virtually 100% dedicated to peddling either illegal counterfeit products or illegal stolen digital content. That is what we're talking about.
All right. Let's speak to Jeff in Las Vegas. Good morning, Jeff.
How's it going?
It's going well. What's on your mind?
Just wanted to start by saying, you know, I support some sort of regulation as far as piracy is concerned. But I think one of the issues that is maybe not being addressed is that, you know, as far as the international piracy is concerned and the distribution of content, you know, in the social media era where content or the availability of content or the discussion of content is instant and it happens instantaneously. But internationally, a lot of the releases of the content are delayed such that, for example, in New Zealand, you know, you could wait 3 months for a movie to be released in New Zealand after it's released in North America. And so there's demand for content, but the timing of the people that are creating the content doesn't necessarily coincide with the current discussion of that content and the people's demand to see and view that content.
Right. Jeff, I appreciate the comment. Thank you very much. Let me get to a few web comments. This one comes from an intellectual property attorney who writes, after more than 200 years, patents last only 17 years, more or less, while copyrights last more than 100. Why is that? Because the vast majority of copyrights are held by a handful of very large corporations, while large corporations spend much more time and effort defending against patents than asserting them. Copyrights have been warped from a tool to enrich our culture to a subsidy for large, super wealthy corporations. Kim in San Ramon writes, the polite term for some forms of piracy is syndication. Indeed, my own writing has been syndicated by the Huffington Post and myriad other sites, and I haven't seen a penny of revenues, and often have to go after these news aggregators to credit me with a byline. Rick Cotton, I wonder how you view the future of dealing with digital content. I mean, the idea, we're dealing with it here at KQED as we're posting more to the web and talking about Twitter and Facebook and online video because we have union issues and so on. So I have to admit, I empathize in that regard because I work in a similar environment. But the fact of the matter is, sooner or later, big companies like NBC Universal, even relatively big companies like ours, have to deal with the financial aspect internally as well as externally. How do you reconcile that?
Well, digital distribution is the future. I think it's really that simple. And what the internet offers is the opportunity for consumers to obtain, whether, again, it's physical product ordered from websites or whether it's digital content obtained instantaneously, to obtain content when they want it, how they want it, where they want it. But if we want those new digital distribution capabilities to flourish, and if we want them to distribute products which in fact are the product of hundreds, thousands, millions of hours of person hours, of monetary investment, again, whether it's creating a new physical product or whether it's creating digital content, there has to be some way that investment, that's what it is, investment in creating those products is justified. And that is what our economy depends on. And so what I would say to you in terms of the future is that it depends on the twofold approach. Make content and products available easily to consumers, but at the same time, we must put roadblocks, we must enforce the law, we must stop the hijacking of American jobs by foreign internet criminals.
Let's hear from Casey in Burlingame. Casey, good morning.
Yeah, I think we should stop that, and I think the owners of the content should be held responsible for stopping it, not me being restricted from going places on the internet. I think that's like me leaving my garage wide open and saying everyone else has to be locked in their house to keep from stealing it.
That's an interesting analogy, Casey. Thank you very much. Let's talk to Brandon in Hayward. Brandon, good morning.
Good morning. My biggest problem with SOPA is that it attacks the DNS system, and people, like you said before, will just go around it. And Hollywood doesn't have a very good reputation of, keeping their complaints within the guidelines, because they sent a bogus complaint in Lens versus Universal, and I was wondering how they're going to prevent that from happening with these takedowns internationally.
Rick Cotton, can you speak to concerns about – thank you for the comment, Brandon. Rick Cotton, can you speak about how that process will work when someone complains and there is a question about it?
Well, so 2 points. All of the actions that we're talking about have to be pursuant to a court order. That is the highest form of procedural protection that we have available, whether it's in the physical world or the virtual world, so that nothing can happen unless a judge sees the evidence and decides that a site is violating what are very high standards in terms of being dedicated to illegal activities. But on the effectiveness point, the reality is that these are criminal enterprises, and by interfering, even if there are ways that some individuals can get around it, and nothing is going to be a silver bullet. Nothing is going to stamp out the desires of some individuals. But the fact is, we have to convey to the vast majority of law-abiding users of the internet that there are activities that are impermissible, and that is going to sites for stolen digital content or for counterfeit goods.
Let me go to a few more of our online comments. I have to say, as I've flipped through these comments quickly, the overwhelming majority of the comments are against SOPA and PIPA. Including
I could just make one point,
please.
Which is that a 1,000-person public opinion poll, not obviously limited to a particular demographic on the internet, found that 80% of individuals favored stronger laws to prevent access to criminal foreign internet sites.
They favored stronger laws, or they favored this law?
They favored stronger laws. This is
but what about this one specifically? Did the poll deal with this?
It's actually a very moderate, measured, targeted law.
I see Fred Von Lohman shaking his head.
Right. I think there is general agreement that we need strong laws. There's also, I heard Mr. Cotton say, general agreement that legitimate alternatives is the key in the long term to winning this battle. The issue about SOPA, about this particular measure, is whether or not these remedies, site blocking, having ISPs block sites, whole sites for American internet users, search removal, removing whole sites from search, basically disappearing entire websites as the result of government orders. That's the question in this bill, not whether or not we need strong enforcement for copyright and piracy. There's general agreement that we need those things. What the question here is, should we be going down a road of censorship? Should we be embracing the same kinds of approaches that regimes like China, Iran, Pakistan, and others have undertaken, again, to enforce their domestic laws? They will look at us and they will say, when you guys think you have a domestic law problem, you censor the internet. Why are you telling us we can't do the same thing for our laws?
Let me get to a few more comments. Here's an email saying that from Mark, writing that both of these companies are part of the problem. Google is in some ways part of the solution. Google is a huge censor. They censor by using algorithms like PageRank or by requiring payments like AdWords. Major media is also a huge censor via exclusive channels of distribution. The solution to piracy, he writes, is to provide an open, easy-to-use online vending machine, digital rights management free, play anywhere digital goods. We're getting there. New performance models have to emerge as well. Moving bits is only going to get easier. Thaddeus Atreides on Facebook writes, chasing pirates using the legal system would be the equivalent of sending turtles after cheetahs. They will change their addresses and locations faster than any legal jurisdiction system could be created to stop the threat. Let's speak to Alex on the line. Alex, good morning.
Hi, yes. So I come at this from the point of view of an economist, and there's sort of two points. The first is that there seems to be more and more content that's created every year, so obviously the content owners are finding very good reasons to keep producing content, which is the whole point of copyrights to start with. And the second point is it seems to me that a better approach would be to find alternative revenue models, like, for instance, musicians mostly make money through concerts, et cetera. They don't actually make that much money of CDs apart from a couple of really big acts. And so I'm not sure that piracy is the problem. I think the problem is a business model problem.
Just having a more creative way of making money.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate the comment. Rick Cotton, I want to put something that just occurred to me. Suppose that the CNBC website, which NBC Universal owns, got hit with one of these requests. You know, you take CNBC is a global company. You have a piece of video that is used as part of a story. The video is owned by someone else. And now your company faces one of these complaints. How would NBC Universal deal with it if you were the website that was told one of your foreign websites is causing me grief?
Well, but the it's not just any foreign website. It is a foreign website that is dedicated to illegal activity. It is a complete myth that a single or even a few questionable items would subject any website to any action under this legislation. And that is the point. We are talking about criminal enterprises that are stealing U.S. jobs on a wholesale basis. So the answer to your question is, if there was a single or a few contested clips on a CNBC site in Europe, it doesn't meet the standards of the bill. We would obviously take those down, but that is not what this legislation is about. It is about wholesale theft.
Fred von Lohman from Google, as our time is running short, I want to put to you one last question, which, oddly enough, really isn't part of the conversation, but I wanted to put it out there just to illustrate how complex this is. Marion, who wrote about this, asks, it mentions that her grandson, a seventh grader, says he has a classmate that will jailbreak his phone so he can get games for free. He says that everyone does it and that it's not stealing. It may not be illegal, but it sounds like it might be at least unethical. I'm hoping that your experts can help us understand the importance of societal consequences of such possibly unjust actions. Does jailbreaking belong in this discussion? Now, jailbreaking is a different area of the law that's dealt with by the Copyright Office, and jailbreaking a phone is legal. But I guess I want to wrap up by asking you, the ground under this issue shifts constantly. Do you foresee a solution to this in the future, or are companies like Google just going to have to keep fighting this forever?
I'm very optimistic about digital content online. Every day we're seeing new offerings, new legitimate alternatives. And so, quite frankly, you heard an earlier caller mention the Valve, which is a video game company that distributes online a lot of video games that previously were distributed, you know, in boxes in stores. And what they found is, you know, piracy, as they put it, you can take care of that. You need a better product at a compelling price, and then people aren't going to need to jailbreak phones and try to steal content.
Fred von Lohman of Google and Rick Cotton of NBC Universal. Fred, thank you very much for being here.
Pleasure.
And Rick, I certainly do appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
A pleasure.
Also, thanks to filmmaker Ellen Seidler and Congressman Daryl Issa for joining the conversation. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Amy Machado, and Kevin Guillory. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our technical director today is Mr. Danny Bringer. In our next hour, we'll be talking about Bay Area sports. A lot of moving potentially going on out of Oakland for some weird reason. We hope you line up on the phones to join us for the discussion on that. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News, here today for Michael Krasny. Thank you for your time. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Ferro, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.